What's up, everyone? It's Gavin or Tweak.
What up, it's Charles the Truck.
What's going on? You got Matt or Has. Actually, we do have a fourth guest. Yes.
Yo, it's
Surprise secret guest.
Larry Arler.
It's not our middle. Okay. Yeah. You did great, Larry. Nice job.
He
What's
nailed
up,
it.
dude? It's great to see you. One of my favorite people in the scenes, I think, shared amongst all the podcast people at Tweak Talks. One of our favorite people. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing good, and yeah, I'm here with you guys are some of my favorite people too, so always good to have you or for you guys to have me on.
He took the podcast just like that. It's his. Larry Lurs. Gavin, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I restreamed all of MomoCon, well, a lot of it throughout the weekend. And yeah, I would say I'm pretty prepared to chat about everything. What's up, Charles?
He's quite prepared. What up? I had a good time. Me and Haz were at Momo, so we definitely would have joined you on the restream party or whatever, the watch
You weren't
party.
invited. It's okay.
Oh snap! Tweak talks is like we can't tweak talks it
It's
up.
different now, bro.
Talk
He's different.
shit. Yeah. All right.
He's
Okay,
changed.
streamer Gavin. All right, streamer Gavin. I got it. I got it.
Sorry,
But
sorry.
yeah, I guess we're too busy being at the actual event, which was very fun. So, shout out to MomoCon for bringing us out. Top 8 was really fun. There was not too many cringe characters, and like the slower paced matchup was right in the beginning. So, yeah, I think the overall top 8 was amazing. There was a lot of different characters, a lot of different styles. So, had a great time, and the actual event was really fun. The highlight for me though was playing poker. I played poker 2 nights with everyone, and it was really fun. We had like it was a small game, like $40 buy-in, but that was definitely the highlight of the event for me. And yeah, just catching up with everyone. So. Yeah, I'm ready to get into it. How are you? How's your weekend, Hez?
It's terrible. As I'm Momo. No, I had a great dude.
Yeah.
You know, I love Momo, bro. You guys know that. I missed exactly one Momo. I think it's the one Gavin went to, and then I never went back. Coincidence? I don't know. I'll leave that up to you, chat. But yeah, I love Momo. It's just such a homie event. We have so much fun every year when we go. Like Charles said, we started playing poker this year, which was really fun. After the event was over, after the con shut down, we were done for the night. But we weren't done for the night. We'd go and play some poker. My favorite thing we did. Finally rode that damn big Ferris wheel, bro, in downtown Atlanta. I
We
see it
did
every
it.
year, and every year I was like, guys, let's go on the Ferris wheel. Everyone's like, yeah, that sounds cool. It sounds fun. See the whole city, see the sights. Never do it. We just never do it. We run out of time every time. We do some other stupid shit. But this year, I was like, we're doing it. We're sticking to it. So that's how it worked. And I think that's just how we need to do things, especially like a group of casters and top players. It's like someone's just gonna get left out. Like you can't, someone can't make it. You know what I mean? We're all so busy and all that stuff. Sometimes you just gotta ditch people. But we got it done, and I was very satisfied because I've been saying I would do that for however long MomoCon has been doing Smash tournaments, and I finally did it. So it was pretty cool. Did
Sick.
not live up to the hype though. It was like 10 years of build up, and it was pretty good. You should do it
Yeah.
if you go though. It was
I mean, I
good.
think it's something you should do at least once. Just seeing the city from that high of a view is always nice.
That's right. And Chuck ditched me. We didn't go to the movie. So, but the tournament was great.
but I played poker.
You did, and I think you went up actually.
Yes, I needed that night. Yes.
Okay, good. All right. You guys want to talk MomoCon?
Sure.
Oh,
That's
wait,
pretty
I want to
important
say
for
one
me.
thing about MomoCon first. Or I
Uh-oh.
guess it's like the weekend. I just hate that MomoCon and Comma Breaker are always on the same weekend.
Dude,
It would be
yes.
yeah, it would be so nice if they were on separate events because I re like it always cuts the attendance for
Yeah.
the tournament, which is crazy because MomoCon is typically always pretty big. But then think how much bigger the event would be for MomoCon if it was on a different weekend. And then the same thing for Combo Breaker, because
Yep.
it's kind of unfortunate because even though they have Smash, I feel like most people tend to go to MomoCon because it's just like a bigger Smash tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I always think about them. Like it just really sucks.
I
It's
do
a competitive
too.
weekend. Memorial Day weekend is pretty competitive, and I think with these events, they've had so much time doing it on that weekend. It's so hard to pivot out of it.
And same thing as I said, I've never missed a MomoCon, which also means well, except for the one. That means I've never been to a combo breaker, and I always like catch up. You know, I'm on social media all day, like watching all the clips, like who's winning what event, like who's doing well, keep up with Smash and all that stuff. So yeah, I really wish. It's like every year I'm like, maybe this will be the year I go to combo breaker, and then it's like, no, it's Momo, man. I'm always gonna go to Momo. I love that event. It's so fun.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. It's just like most people who like are in Smash are going to MomoCon. It's just like the bigger Smash event. And
Yeah.
then you're at a convention, and then Atlanta, Georgia is just sick. So
Great Smash region too. Some of my favorite competitors from Georgia, Florida, that area. True.
Combo Breakers never had the most impactful Smash event over the years. Like you said, like the attendance split is unfortunate. And there was also a lot of other tournaments this weekend. There was MomoCon, there was King of Fields, and there's one more. Was it Japan?
Yeah. Oh, Sumobato, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot to keep up with. Yeah, it was a little bit easier for me to just stream and keep track of MomoCon. And honestly, it was a pretty unpredictable event. So I think that leaves a lot to be talked about. So, yeah. How was seeing all the crazy upsets and everything? So,
I think for me, off the top of my head, I expected Wrath and Didi to get much further in the bracket. So, yeah. Didi going out at 9th and Wrath going out at 7th, I think, was a huge surprise for everyone, and probably the biggest upsets of the tournament that I can think of off the top of my head. I don't know if you guys had any other upsets that were bigger in mind, or like around this. Just like so much upsets in general, right?
I don't know about bigger, but one that really surprised me was that Vendetta beat Mudace, but not just that he won, but that it was a 3-0. Like, that was pretty surprising to me. And the way he won every time, I'm pretty sure every game was like last stock, pretty big come from behind victory, like huge percent, Ken Rage combo, basically, or Ken Rage, whatever, man, KO option. So that definitely surprised me, because I think Mute typically does really well. Like, Mute's super patient, and I feel like that's really effective against Ken's playstyle. Peach hits as hard as Ken does, and like all these other things. So I was just kind of surprised it went 3-0. Not that I believe in Vendetta. Vendetta's fantastic, obviously. I was just surprised at how the set went down. Not that necessarily one player really won or lost, but really what the total final result was, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Apparently, Vendetta before that set was 2-0 on Mute in set count. So, like, he just...
Yes, but that was a while ago, too, though.
Okay. True. But yeah, that was something, because I had talked to viewers about them. They're like, oh, yeah, Vendetta just beats Mudace for some reason. Like, he just does really well against them. So...
It's because you heard it on the great commentary, Larry, that was brought up. True. Actually, it's 2024.
Yeah.
In October, so that was, like, 6 months ago.
It could be, like, a... You know, it could be a playstyle thing. Could also be a confidence thing, because I feel like sometimes when someone just beats someone, you're like, okay, well, I'm just gonna beat them again. You don't really think about too much into it. It's just like that level of confidence just helps carry you into like the next encounter you have with them.
Yeah.
You tweeted afterwards too. He was like, I don't know why Vendetta's the only Ken who can hit that hard against me. You know what I'm saying? Like, Mew tweeted about it. So they're like you said, Larry, maybe it's just Vendetta's got it like that against Peach. He also does well against Ling, if you guys know Ling, the New England Peach. So maybe maybe he's just like that, man. I don't know. But he was playing really well. He in taking Paris to game 5, I think once again, like almost taking a set off of Light super close. So he was just on one, I think, on Sunday. So I'm obviously happy to see it. But
yeah, crazy losers run that like bled into the next day too. And I think what's impressive about it with Ken compared to the other fighting game characters is for Ken, for things to work out and like get a crazy moment, like it requires a lot more resets, a lot more like correct guesses, like things like that. Like, it's not as simple as like Ryu Kazuya, where like the confirms are like not very layered and like the combos like are more consistent. Like, for Ken, there's a lot more like mix-ups and like things that aren't as guaranteed. And the fact that Vendetta was able to like just keep the momentum going across a couple days in losers, like for a bunch of different wins in a row, says a lot. And yeah, like versus Mudace, he just got the one opportunity he needed to steal a game and capitalize every single time, and that's how he won every single game.
Yeah.
Very close. I love what Larry said about like there's something to be said, and it doesn't get talked about a lot, about like how much the momentum carries across like beating someone like one singular time. Like, there's so many examples of it in my like personal experience from playing Smash, where like sometimes getting one win on someone can translate to like a lot of wins on them. Like breaking that wall or like getting that much momentum, like it like transcends the event you're playing them at currently. Like it goes a long way. Like at one point, Leo beat me like a million times in a row. And it really did feel like, damn, if I just get one win, like it'll just shift entirely. And that's exactly what happened. Like I got one win and it just like, I just like evened up all like the damage in the set count, like from there. It's just interesting. I feel like it's not a topic that comes up often. It's not even about like matchups or like a head to head thing. It's like sometimes that one win just like puts you in a space where like you can just carry the momentum for like multiple encounters.
Yeah, I like what you said, Gav, about Ken's advantage state and it kind of being like a gambling simulator. Yeah. When you go into Crescent, and if you don't end it, if you don't do the hard hit of Crescent to end, you can go up Air Shoryu, which you can steal stock super early with. But Mute's defense was really good against like the regular Crescent kind of pressure follow-ups. Like he just wasn't getting hit by a lot of that. So what Vendetta started doing was holding A at the end of the Crescent, which forced Mute onto the ground for techs rather than going for like, you know, the crazy Ken kills you see at like 50 or 60 or whatever with Rage. So it was a really good adjustment on the fly as well, I thought. And I feel like with Ken and characters like him, it's always good to test your opponents to see what they'll do out of those kind of sequence moves. Rather than true combo moves, then if they're not working, it's like, all right, I'm just going to cash out, and I'd rather go for something a little safer. And something I really want to ask you and Larry about, and Chuck too, is something I really thought was a big factor at this event was, and it was kind of old school in this way, where we went from round one pools into maybe on Friday or first half of Saturday into all of the bracket, aside from top eight, was on day two. And then you have that night of rest and a night to study and like get ready for your round one opponent the next day going into top eight. How much of like a difference maker do you guys think that really is going into something like playing against Wrath or like playing Wrath at the end of the day on Saturday feels like a completely different boss than playing against Wrath on first thing on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, right? I don't know if I overstate that. I haven't made a ton of top eights in my life of at a major, so I'd like to hear what you guys think about that.
Well, Hazen, even before you said when we're at MomoCon, you said, oh, yeah, Momo does it old school, because I was like, oh, what's the schedule looking like for Sunday for casting, right? And I'm on the same boat as Haz. You know, I don't have too many major top eights under my belt, but obviously you guys do. So the whole idea of like it being split between Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I think more recently events have been doing top 32 and top 64 on Sunday rather than just top eight.
I guess to start off, for the competitor, it really just depends on them, because I feel like sometimes it could hurt them a lot. Like, let's say they were playing really, really hot on Saturday, and they're like, you know, you go on to Sunday, and they're like kind of burnt out because they just went through so many matches, and they just feel like they're out of it.
Yeah.
But then vice versa, like at the same time, you could have someone who's like, you know, they play like garbage the day, like on Saturday, and then they somehow called their way to get the top A, and then they're like, okay, I'm playing way better. Maybe I just needed that break.
I think it goes so many ways. And yeah. I feel like this is something that doesn't get talked about often. Maybe it's because like not as many people have the experiences, but there is that feeling like all the time where it's like, if I can just make it through to the next day, like I'll play way better the next day. Like, you know what I mean? Or like, there's something crazy about flying across the country, clawing through bracket on a Saturday, making it to like losers top eight. You wake up, you do this and that, and you just like lose 3-0. And it's like, what the fuck just happened? Like your whole weekend kind of just boils down to like one moment. And like you played like a million sets on Saturday, but now it feels like you didn't do anything at all. It's like Sunday morning, you're already out of the tournament. Like it's brutal. I feel like your confidence can get shaken in so many different ways. And you can also like get a lot of misunderstandings of your own situation too. Like, I don't know, like you win a bunch of game five Saturday and going into Sunday, you're not sure how to feel. And like, I've played so many situations out where like I play against an opponent the next day, like really poorly, 'cause I'm still kind of caught up on how I was playing against certain matchups on Saturday. And yeah. It's just a different work day almost. Like in Sunday, there's a lot more downtime in between matches. There's a lot more waiting in between your first match. And sometimes on Saturday, you'll just play from like 12 to 10 nonstop or something. Like, so it just requires like different skill sets sometimes. And it can be really chaotic. I feel like we've never really talked about this extensively. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, personally, I feel like I like it better when it's just like a good mix of like play for both Saturday and Sunday. Like,
yeah, you know, like a top 16 on Sunday or top 32 on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like kind of what you said, like sometimes the next day you just feel like you didn't do anything because you had like one say, like, oh, well, shit, I'm out.
Yeah. You don't get a chance to be yourself sometimes or like get going or get any momentum. Like,
yeah. Because having like the first set you play, like after a day, sometimes you have to figure out how you're playing. Like, you have to kind of reevaluate your play. And it's way better to do that when you have like more matches to look forward to. Whereas top eight, you're maybe losing
round on top eight.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's very, very different. Yeah. So for that reason, I like having a better mixture. And I also think it's just better for viewers too, because I feel like sometimes viewers kind of like the buildup of going into top eight, like on Sunday, rather than like, oh, you're just waiting the entire time. And like, you know, it's only this game or it's only top eight on Sunday.
But I think Kagariba, you had a good balance, right? Like Sunday was like, wasn't it like 196? No.
It was a lot.
I think it was 192.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like that was
200. Yeah.
That was good. It felt like it was a perfect middle ground between like warming up, but not like burning out either. Like, I was playing like a very steady amount, and there was no like notable time where like you question what's going on. Like, it feels like you almost don't even have time to overthink things because you're just playing at like a very steady schedule. Mm-hmm. Plus, there was just a lot of people, so I think they had no choice but to schedule it the way they did. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it felt like very efficient. It flowed very nicely.
Yeah. Everyone's different though. Like, I don't know. Like, I think of someone like Light, and there's so many tournaments where he walks in on Saturday. He's like, "Oh, I didn't sleep. I'm playing terribly." Then he gets top eight, and like, people are just so.
Well, he ramps up. Like he wants he wants the games to be able to ramp up throughout the tournament.
Yeah,
which is why him coming through losers is not uncommon. I think Light is very experienced in that position, and he even says things like when he's in game, he would rather be last stock with the person with the rage rather than last stock with the person at zero spawning in, right? Where it's like, okay, don't botch this, like your Fox, don't botch it, don't die at 40 to some rage bullshit, like hit this back air at the very end. Or he could be the Fox with rage where it's like, oh, if I hit you with Sour Nair at 70 or 80, you're dead, so I'm gonna down throw, platform tech chase, 70 damage, one more nair. If I hit soft nair, you lose, right? Like being in that, I think for him, he prefers to be in that situation where he's like scrapping from behind. And that's almost kind of his play style within a macro bracket format where he feels comfortable gaining the momentum through losers and just shooting in the top eight from there.
Yeah.
Where I would say like your style, you prefer to be like rock solid in winners and like almost put all your eggs in your basket in terms of like, I'm going to stay in winners and like be in a very safe position and try to get into winners grand, like get into grand's winner side. Obviously everyone wants to do that. But like, when I just think of two players that I've seen a lot, there's two very different ways you guys throw down in bracket in terms of like your usual bracket paths.
Yeah. It's hard. I feel like it depends on how I wake up sometimes. Like I feel like I've done a bit of everything, like ramping up, just winning without any hiccups, blah, blah, blah. Like, It's hard to say. Like, I guess you just have to ride the wave that makes the most sense to you when you wake up that day. But I talked about this with Haz. I think we might have talked about it on the show a little bit too, where I do like having a lot of time alone to myself. I don't like ramp up in the game. I like ramp up in my own head like before the day starts, I think. And it's hard to do that if I'm not by myself. Like, you know, I wake up, I eat by myself, work out a little bit, like listen to music. Like, I just like, it's like all like, I'm trying to be ramped up before I sit down, I guess, or like before I even walk in the building.
Into that too, everyone has their own process, like you were saying, right? Like, and I think you and Paris are the perfect examples of like exact opposites. Like,
There's
no way he could do what you do. You know what I mean? In terms of preparation, and no way you could do what he does.
Yeah. Like, zero sleep. Like, I've definitely done well on zero sleep. I've actually won major tournaments without sleeping, which is insane. but I'm not waking up and popping a Red Bull and like not playing the game at all and like saying I'm playing like shit and like then just like top rating. Because that's what Light does every time.
Yeah. Especially him playing like shit.
Like, oh, I suck so bad. Winners
top playing eight. Like shit into getting top eight true combo for Light is a thing at tournaments.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I haven't played this game in 3 years.
He's got like this, he has an old beard and shit. Like, it's been 3 years.
I didn't sleep. I'm hungover. I'm drinking 10 Red Bulls. I haven't played in 3 months.
I don't have my controller.
Gavin also doesn't consume caffeine as well. So I feel like for some players, caffeine is like the break in case of emergency where it's like,
yeah,
oh man, I like couldn't sleep last night, whether it was because I went out or just I couldn't get sleep in my hotel room for whatever reason, right? And it's like, okay, pop the Red Bull, pop two Red Bulls. I've seen players pop even more at certain
points, bro. Times.
Yeah, so it's like
break the glass.
Yes, sometimes players be breaking multiple glasses, but for Gavin, he doesn't have that. Like he just doesn't consume caffeine. So I think you're more on the preparation side, where it's like, okay, I just want to make sure I have this routine that I'm gonna go through. I get this amount of sleep. I wake up and I do X, Y, and Z by myself in solitude, so I can think things through and stuff like that. You're a little bit more routinic, where I would say Paris is more firing from the hip.
It's a hard balance too, because you do want to be loose. Like you want to hang out with people you love and have a good balance between like prepping and not like burning yourself out before you even sit down. Yeah, it's interesting. I've had so much experience to like tinker with it, and like I'm also such a karmic and like superstitious person that like sometimes I screw myself over before like the weekend even starts. I'm just like, oh, I messed everything up. Like, I'm done. Like it's like that ridiculous for me. So,
Dude.
I think a lot of people get superstitious like that when their job is just like them by themselves and like all they have is relying on themselves. So,
I think
you're just gonna naturally look out for patterns, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You bring up another really good point too, like the work life balance of being in a Smash tournament. And obviously for you guys as a competitor, it's like, how much do I play? You know, you don't want to burn yourself out just from playing so much, but then it's like, I also deserve some time with my friends and we only get together.
But then you do poorly and you blame the fact that you had too much fun.
Yes.
And then
you never deserve fun again. True.
Yes. And then the next tournament, you lock yourself away, do nothing at all, play like shit again. And then you're just like, well, fuck.
Yeah, might as well have fun.
What am I?
Might as well have fun.
We do the same thing as casters too, because it's like, when do we get sleep? You know, who's doing the opening block? And like studying the night before, I had to leave poker early because I was like, I'm gonna go study for these fucking sets. I'm gonna go watch Peebnut versus Wrath, right? Because I want to know what the fuck I'm talking about. Not a set I voluntarily had watched before that tournament, but actually turned out to be a really fun set to commentate, to be honest with you, since I knew what to look for and all that shit. So. It is a real thing at Smash tournaments, and I feel like everybody feels that shit. You know what I mean? It's tough, dude. We only get a weekend. Like, that sucks, man.
Yeah.
It's only three days or, like, 2 days and two nights or whatever it is.
So it all becomes just, like, a repeating pattern thing, like Carl said. Mm-hmm. Like, you can kind of get sucked up in it, and sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's not. Like, sometimes the weekend's over, I got first place, and I'm like, what the fuck happened? Like, I guess I was just sticking to the schedule. Like, I don't even remember, like, the process. Like, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I feel like you create a lot of habits, for better or worse, when it's just, like, you by yourself. Like, you get so specific about things that don't even matter that much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to affect the outcome of, like, a match or something.
It's just hard to point out what is making you perform better and what is making you perform worse. Because, I mean, everything has so much context. Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, most of the things you're even thinking about just probably has zero to no impact.
Right? It would be easy to just be convinced that, like, all you got to do is play. But, like, when you're a human being, like, it's just, I don't know.
Some of it's like you said, superstition. Some of it's, like, just odds. Like, if you get better sleep, you're probably more alert when you're playing. Mm-hmm. But... who knows? Like, maybe just staying up all night. Also, I don't know. It's weird, man. Sorry.
Yes, some people are convinced if they do terrible things to their body, they will win. Like I've gone through it. Like, when I was younger, I was like, whoa, I won this tournament on no sleep. Maybe I should do that on purpose.
Like,
no, oh, ooh, this is a great question.
So bad.
What is your guys'
Street Toss does not condone that, by the way. Please
get some don't sleep. Do that.
Sure. Get some sleep. What is your guys' sweet spot for if you want like a specific hours amount of hours of sleep for a tournament? Do you know your own sweet spot? Really? So I have a number. I have a specific number of hours of sleep. Mine's a 6 hours of sleep. I want specifically 6. That's what I feel like I compete the best with in Smash from like the time I've played.
Yeah.
I put a number on it, like specifically 6.
The best I could do is set a minimum, you know, and then try to hit that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I can't be like if I'm casting first thing in the morning at 10 a.m. pool, I'm not going to like stay up until past 2 a.m. or some shit. You know what I mean? I guess it is 6. Yeah. Cause then I'll get up around 8:30 and get ready and go.
I think I just That's set it fair. Up around like I want to eat and be able to have time before eating and playing. Like that's about it. So like the sleep kind of gets figured out.
Plan the sleep like after
around like when my first match is, I guess. That's pretty much it.
Larry? I feel like for me it's like at least I need at least 5, and I also need to have enough time, kind of what Tweak said.
Yeah.
To like get breakfast. I need to like walk around, and
there has to be a buffer between
being
a human and playing, I think.
Yeah. Dude, I need to like go outside, see the sun, you know, feel feel like I exist before I just
I am a human being on planet Earth.
Become a bot. Yeah.
I don't want to wake up and be like, all right, I have 15 minutes.
Oh, that's terrible. That sucks. That's a terrible way to live life in general.
I've definitely done that, and I feel like almost every time I play horribly. Like,
oh dude, when I was younger, I would just degen it up. If like the venue was the hotel, they would just be like, all right, wake up, shower, that's it. Like, go play. It's like, damn, I didn't go outside. Like one time I was talking to a sports psychologist. I think it was about like an Evo tournament. And he was like, bro, like you probably didn't go outside at all. Like it's like a big ass, like the Luxor or whatever. Like you don't go outside. You're in your hotel room. You walk to the venue, like. The food's in the venue. Like, I was like, damn, I probably didn't go outside. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about.
So bad, dude. So bad.
But that's what Vegas does to you. It's like on purpose, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's no clocks, no natural sunlight. Yep. They don't want you to know what time it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
True.
They want your ass gambling.
That worked on me, bro. But for a different reason, I guess. I wasn't gambling.
Trash up the switch, bro. At the Smash setup. All right. Enough about sleep. Can we talk about Beast Mode Paul real quick? Just like for a second, bro. Golly. Kid is good.
He's nice with it.
Man. I think the best way to describe it is if you look at Omega's run, and he was just like so clutch, craziest run of his life, just could not get through Beast Mode Paul. Like, that's like Beast Mode Paul was unaffected by any of the craziness by MomoCon and just won. Like, that's how I felt about it. Like, it's like, it didn't matter what anyone did. Or like, he was winning. Like, there was nothing was going to change that, it felt like.
You know what's crazy, too? Like, you talk about Omega's run, because I feel like his run is way, like, not, you know, obviously Beast Mode Paul won.
Yeah.
But I feel like Omega's run was probably the most impressive thing that weekend.
It was one of those.
Dude, he destroyed bracket demon after bracket demon.
Yeah exactly. Like,
everyone...
Yeah, Mudase.
He was 0-5 against Mudase, 1-22.
Comeback first Wrath.
And then he had just lost to Paris. Dude. And then
Joker's fucked up.
Right?
What's up?
You could have teched. He
lost the Paris at level up.
Right? He did lose the Paris. Yes, you're reading. Someone listened to the commentary. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, man.
He actually told me it was muted.
Oh, that makes sense.
I like almost always have it muted.
you thought Chuck was coming on first. These streamers be muting us, Chuck. It's so offensive.
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, give 10 subs and I'll raise the volume.
Honestly, okay. My commentary was better in Smash 4 anyway. I get it.
No, to be fair,
I hate you with this narrative, Chuck.
The reason why I'm muted isn't because I love you guys' commentary, but I also think it would just distract me and I wouldn't like actually talk when I'm doing watch parties.
Thanks. So you legitimately didn't hear me say any of these things?
No, I like to research myself.
So you think our commentary is dog shit?
Bro, I literally just said, damn. Like,
he didn't say
I
no.
Love your commentary. You actually
didn't say no.
He
didn't
say
my no. The long pause was.
He literally laughed and changed the subject. That's insane.
No, I love you guys, you know.
Not our commentary. Isn't dog shit.
I love you guys. I like the commentary.
Oh, all right. Well, we're getting somewhere now.
Okay.
Charles, but you gotta stop talking down about your commentary. It drives me nuts. You had a great weekend too. And I gave it to you straight. So, bro, I was studying for who was it? Omega Gets Light. And I saw they played at Level Up, so I started watching the VOD. And I'm like, oh fuck yeah, Charles is on commentary. Let's go. Like, it's Light, it's fucking, you know, Omega on Joker, who Charles knows well too. Sweet, let's go. Start listening. I'm like, what's going on here? I was like, this is not the Chuck that I know. And then Chuck, after, he was like, dude, I hated my commentary at Level Up. I was like, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. Not your best, bro. Like, you need to bring it back. You got to bring the heat at Momo. And you know what? He did. He did great at Momo.
You know what's crazy? At first, I thought my, after I did the commentary, I was like, but it's been so long. The last time I commentated from Level Up was Genesis. And even before that, like, I just haven't been commentating as much, right? So after Level Up, I'm like, yeah, I felt like it was pretty good. And then I rewatched my VODs, which I usually don't do, but I was like, man, was it good? And then I rewatched the VOD and I was like, oh.
Wait, you rewatched it for your commentary specifically?
Yes.
Are you doing commentary VOD real? Nice.
Yes. And I haven't done that in a while, which is probably bad.
It's
but,
so good to do.
Yes, I did. And I was just like, I didn't like it. But I felt like I don't think it was bad necessarily. I personally didn't like it. But my commentary at Momo felt a lot more like how I like to commentate. I don't know how to explain it, but.
What if you were casting with someone and like a hype moment in the set happens and they like don't do anything and they're just like on the mic live, they're just like, I'm not what I used to be.
this is a good skit idea. This is a really good.
That like, would be so
Omega gets the down or up smash on Wrath and they're just like, I'm not feeling it.
Remember
anymore.
When I was good at commentary?
Dude, what if the other comes, cut the mic.
Let's instantly
Mike
make
ever
this
been
moment
cut somebody me. Before. That's hilarious.
Oh no, not the cut the mic, dude.
They're like yelling, trying to hype up the moment, like push the caster away. Like, I'm not letting you ruin my moment.
This is a great skit idea. This is very funny. I like this a lot.
Yeah, I wish Paris had more games in top eight, but I didn't.
You and Paris?
I didn't. Mode? Yeah, well, I just wanted to see Paris versus Beast Mode because we didn't see it in the tournament. But Omega getting the run back, I think if we got a reset, that would have been more hype. But I think Beast Mode Paul closing it was also really sick. But it felt like the Omega show the entire time because the ramp up to Winners Finals, Omega had all the crazy big upsets. I mean, taking out Light, which is the top seed of the tournament, right? And, I mean, getting all of these set wins that he usually loses against these players, and he's playing so well. So, and then Beast Mode Paul came through and stole the show, it felt like, and I just felt like Peace Mobile was playing the matchup really well. Yeah. Yeah. It was really sick too, because just like the game five conditioning was crazy. Like the way Paul closed out the last two socks with drop zone edge guarding, which he wasn't going for the entire set. And then he just gets two drop zone edge guards, second to the last sock on the right. And then the last sock on the left with the footstool. I thought Beast Mode Paul did a really good job.
Dude, how do you really play great conditioning against Hero when he's changing his stats? Like, so frequently, and like tracking him gets so different, and like there's so many weird little things. Like, it's like playing against like Shulk or Wii Fit, but it's like way weirder. Like, well, being able to change your game plan around like the character stats you're playing against. Like,
yeah, and unlike Shulk, there's not like a Shulk, like, there's a pretty big drawback to all of his arcs, you know what I'm saying? And he does get lighter with Accelerado, but only by a little bit, But it's like, it's just fucking buffing, bro. Like, it's so scary. Like, the stakes feel so much higher against Hero than, not that they, with Shulk, it's like a part of how he plays all the time. But Hero, you're like, I could change this. Like, I could stop this from happening. Then he has fucking bounce and Accelerado and fucking psych up. And nope, you're just, that's it. Like,
it's
now you're playing
really weird to me, because if you look at Hero, it's like, okay, this character has ridiculous reversal potential, but you would think it is. If you're really good, you would avoid it a majority of the time. But I actually think it's the opposite. I think it's so hard to avoid it, even if you're goated, because, like, just how weird it is and how much he, like, changes, like, how he functions as a character just on a whim. Like, he just creates so much inherent chaos that, like, no one plays that well. It's just so hard to play well. That's at least how I perceive it. And I'm also curious what you guys think are is his like best normals, like his best normal moves.
I was going to say, I think the problem too about like Rock Hero's moves is you just can't react to it. Like you can't react to his projectiles. Yeah. Like if he has Psych Up Flame Slash, you have to like immediately see that. You have to look on the menu and read that his Flame Slash. You're like, okay, shit, I can't shield. Yeah. And if you don't see that, like your initial
reaction. The next few seconds, you're just going to play terribly too. Like he just influenced, like he just creates chaos like inherently. And I think that's why like people drop shield to his multi-hits. Or like just play poorly in general. It's something I noticed a lot from watching the stream. When Paul would do run up jab, people drop shield so much. It just that move is just so good,
dude.
Because of how Hero's already like making you freak out in general, that his tempo breaks are just like so good.
And Yeah.
Jab anti-airs too. It's oh man.
When you asked what we think Hero's best move is, I instantly thought of how Paul was using jab. Like it was jab so comes impressive.
Up, it does, yeah.
Dude, it's good. I like Fair a lot too, obviously. I think Fair is so fucking like if you count aerials, I don't know if you just meant grounded normals, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair and jab are the first two that
the thing about his mind. Aerials is once again, I think all of us understand that Hero. Like his normals aren't incredible. Most of them are they're pretty standard moves that are just like acceptable attacks. And it's like, oh, but combined with the spells and the specials, like, okay, I get it. Like I can see why this is strong. But like there's that. And it's also just like what I've been describing in general with like how he kind of influences the game that his normals just work too. Like F tilt and jab. Mm-hmm. Like it was rare. That it took Omega multiple games in like a set and a half to not drop shield to F tilt and jab. And it's similar. Like think of Joker's dash attack, like tempo breaking, but with Hero, it's just like on drugs. And I think that's like a topic that's really interesting to talk about. Cause when Hero first came out, we weren't scared of him for any of these reasons. And the reasons we're scared of him now are a bit different. On top of like the chance of some Hero stuff happening, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like the mention of the tempo break, very similar to something like a Sheik up tilt hitting you with the second hit because you think Sheik forward tilted you, and then so you see the one hit, and then you're like, okay, my turn, and then the second hit of forward tilt comes out. I mean, I think the main move people are thinking they're getting hit on shield with because you're reacting to the fact that your shield is just getting hit. Yeah. You're not registering what move hit your shield.
You like also don't want to shield burst him that much in general. So when you do and your shield gets hit with something,
right?
You're very, very likely to disengage through a jump or something.
Jump is probably the most common shield. Or maybe roll. But even roll has like a frame or two of tangibility before you get the invincibility.
Yeah, probably not roll because you're playing so much around side B.
Right. Like, it just sounds scary to roll, but it's going to be jump most of the time, right? Like you generally want to scramble and jump to position yourself up and over Hero.
Because you're dealing with menu inherently by jumping.
And this is, the situation I want to talk about is I feel like Hero is almost Sonic-esque, if you will, because, and I want to specify Smash 4 Sonic, because Smash 4 Sonic was a stance character that could cancel their stance and go into shield. So Smash 4 Sonic played a lot different from Ultimate Sonic, and I think Hero is kind of doing the same thing, where they're running into the corner, they're pressing down B, they're changing, they're threatening, which could be a stance, right? They could go into Accelerado, they could buff with Psych Up, or, I mean, one of the red buffs, for Psych Up, right? They can get Bounce, so they can go for all of these stance changes, or there's some kind of offensive thing that can happen to you, right? And there it all stems from running away from the opponent, pulling up the menu, and it's like the menu is forcing the opponent in, which is why these things like jab, like forward tilt, these normals, dude, they are up, not that
run great, up grab but, was yeah. Paul's like bread and butter, like a significant amount of the stage he was running across. Like
he forward threw a lot, bro. We saw that, and which I remember because it's such a cool looking throw.
It is a very cool
throw. He throws the sword in the ground. Shit. Now you said that, I was like, damn, we did see that a lot, actually.
Yeah. He like nearly does a somersault while forward throwing you.
Yeah.
It's cool. But I don't want to toot my own horn too much. But this connects very much into the swordy conversation we've had not too long ago.
Oh no, not this.
I even mentioned Hero's design specifically being more worth playing in the long run than a traditional sortie. I swear I said that. I'm pretty sure I said that.
Is that like, yeah, but...
Like, this is how you win in the long run. Don't play some basic shit that will run you into a brick wall. You need to be a weirdo. You have to be a weirdo.
I think Hero is really good. Like, having Zoom and disadvantage is really strong. And, like, when you even compare Accelerado to things like Shulk, Jump Art has a cooldown. Accelerado, your only cooldown is just re-rolling for it after you lose it.
Dude, and then Shulk is almost basic get it again. Game design in comparison to Hero. Like, you need to play with Smash Ultimate. And some of these characters' mechanics are so unique, and there's so many of them, that you naturally just have to have faith in it. Like, I don't know. That's how I feel about it. Like, if you tell, like, I even had a Metafy lesson the other day, and someone asked me, like, if you were going to, like, commit to Lucina or Marth, and you have to play one of them forever, and you're, like, trying to, like, do the best you can, I'm picking Marth.
Yeah, it's going to be Marth. Marth can
I'm going to pick Marth. Like, if I have to, like, double down and pick one character, like, I'm not going to play against these top players that I've known for, like, a decade and play Lucina. Like, I'm like, it's going to be hard for me to break the ceiling. With Marth, I'm going to come up with weird scenarios that make them play poorly. It's not even about, like, landing the perfect scenarios. It's about showing it to them and influencing their play. And with Lucina, I'm just not going to do that as well. Like, people stray from difficulty, and I think they also misunderstand difficulty as well. Like, I don't know. You have to give yourself options, and you have to do weird shit in this game. You just have to. Like, I'm not playing a traditional sortie. I'm not. Some of them are really good anyways, and it's because of, like, just numbers and, like, inherent tempo breaks they can have. But I'm still picking, like... Like, bro, Snake is such a good example of, like, your opponent's just always going to play worse than they want to play, like, 9 times out of 10. They're just not going to play as well as they are imagining they would play in their head. And, like, I don't know. That's how I feel about it. Hero's such a good example of, like, this is Smash Ultimate taking a character with a disjoint and just breaking the mold. And, like, it's more likely to win 10 years from now than Lucina. That's just how I feel. I mean, that's why I picked Diddy Kong, like, years ago, where I just felt like there's just, like, items just inherently have more depth, and I just want that.
You value a higher ceiling, Gavin. So you value higher ceiling than higher
floor. Dude, winning values a higher ceiling, I swear.
Well, no, I mean, it's just...
Like, Steve has all of that times 10.
It depends on the situation. When you run the timeline over a course of 10 years, then ceiling is just better because you have more time to scale. But if you're like, okay, pick Lucina or Marth, and you got a week to prep, your ass is picking Lucina. I hope. Like, unless you think you're that insane that in a week. But, like, it depends on the time allotted, right? When you're comparing floor and ceiling.
It's like, I think do you want fifth place 10 times? Or are you trying to get first place in that good bracket run? Like... What do you
mean? I completely agree with you. I tell low tier mains all the time that they're not trying to win. Like, you're not.
But I think a lot of people, like, whether they realize it or not, are playing too much into, like, I want to get top 32 consistently, and they're not playing to, like, get that one big trophy if they, like, really work at it. That's how I feel about it, with, like, the play styles and character selections and blah blah blah.
Oh, sorry to cut you off.
No.
But I was going to say, I think something that's like kind of like what you were saying, I think there's good tournament characters and then there's bad tournament characters. And I think what Ultimate values competitively is they value characters that give you these very strong game plans that kind of throw your opponent out of their comfort zone, make it difficult for them to, you know, do what they want. It's like you either want a character that makes it difficult for your opponent to do what they want, or you have a very obvious win condition that you just
don't rinse care
throughout the entire game. Yeah, exactly. So, like, there's a lot of really good characters on paper, kind of like what you said with Lucina, but she's a bad tournament character because she is typically playing her opponent's game. She's not really playing her own.
You're always, like, slightly outside of dealing with the issue if you play well, and you can always, like, do something, but it just reaches a point where, should I just keep going?
Yep.
Okay. It just like reaches a point where like you just run out of like you have no more tricks left. Like you have nothing left in your bag after a certain point, and you will have to play Ultimate eventually. It's like, would you rather be like right outside of the problem poking away at it, or would you rather be like super far away from the problem and you become the problem, or would you rather be so good you don't care about the problem?
You know what this kind of reminds me of? You saw that list of like community voted fun to play against tier list?
Yeah.
Bro, that shit kind of fits your little...
Yeah.
It's like tricks or like depth or like things you need to worry about when you're fighting this character on top of how shitty or how good they are.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. Here, I can link it here, but I thought it was neat. But yeah, it definitely reminds me of that. And that's like the more honest, typically honest characters, like Lucina's number one, Wolf's number two, Roy, well, you know, give and take with that one a little bit, but he's still playing Smash for the most, Double-Edged Dance basically aside. Still very good. Marth is fourth, right? Falcon, bullshit up B aside, right? All pretty good.
It's like one of those things where disjoints were the crazy thing that separated characters at one point. It was one of the main things. Now it's like expected of you to have it. And then there's just brand new concepts and ideas that just blow disjoints out of the water. And a lot of us have been playing for a long time, and we think picking up the sword and going to work is like how you win in a tournament environment. And it can, but I think if you really want to like bank on like winning in a way that like is like that first place really like felt like you won that shit, like you need to like do something different. Like we've been picking up disjoints and playing them for so long, and I just don't think it's like a winning formula in Smash Ultimate all the time. Some of those characters can do it, but a lot of the characters people expect to be like the blueprint for Smash Ultimate, I think they might have it all wrong. That's how I feel.
It's unfortunate because I wanted to specifically ask Larry this because I've heard him talk about it, but unfortunately there's some technical issues and he can't rejoin the room. But
Larry left.
So I remember like maybe three or it was like right after quarantine, Larry, because traditionally in the Smash community for like Smash 4 and Brawl, it was like what character has the best neutral, the best kill confirms, right? Like characters like Diddy Kong and Sheik in Smash 4 were known for being super consistent. And you could just run this general strategy that beats most of the cast because you have the best neutral. And that's just how it went. There wasn't too many game warping strategies until like Cloud and Bayo came along in Smash 4. But I feel like, and Larry said that in Ultimate, instead of going for like the Palutenas and stuff like that, just like really solid neutral characters, the Lucinas and stuff like that, you in Ultimate, you kind of want to go with the high tier characters that that win matchups harder, and you just like counter pick with high tiers is what his ideology behind
it was. I don't
think
we should care about consistency anymore. Yeah, like it's
just dude, how hard do you win?
You know, like, who I think is a great character, Gavin, that fits into this little theory you have is Byleth. I feel like really for some reason, because when Byleth first, you don't think, hold on.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Your swordy theory. Cause at first Byleth came out, it's like, damn, Leo's back. He's just on like a swordy. Maybe there's like some things like up B's a little janky. Nair obviously is kind of an X factor move,
but it's all within a disjoint.
But that ceiling for that character got cracked so fast. You know what I'm saying? Like it felt like it was like a 3 or 4 month window or some shit. Like it was not, it did not last very long. And I don't think people think highly of that character anymore. Yeah. I think a part of it is because when you look at those, yes, disjoints are great. Yes, disjoints are awesome. But the base stats, like that character's slow as fuck too. And how do you compensate for that? Like, yes, Hero's frame data sucks, but damn, you can get Excel Rattle. You can get all these buffs. You got the menu. You got all the stupid shit. So I think like those two characters kind of, especially because they're DLC, I don't know, for some reason to me, they're speaking to me about this theory like, a little bit more.
Yeah, sorry. I thought you were saying the opposite. I agree with you 100%.
No. Yes, like, yes, yes.
Who cares about consistency if you're going to select something that throws it out the window for them only? You know what I mean? Or, like, that's what you're trying to do? And it's like, I don't think I always saw that. And, like, over the last couple of years, I started to see it differently, and it really helped. Whereas, like, after a while, you have to realize, like, damn, like, I'm really good at this game, but my consistency is getting all thrown out of whack, and it's, like, not a coincidence. Like, the characters are doing it. Like,
oh.
And in Smash 4, we thought that, like, the craziest, like, characters that influence the game are, like, going to throw you out of whack was, like, Ryu, Luigi. Like, that was, like, a lot of the fundiest players were getting really pissed off. And, like, there's truth to it. And, like, a lot of people view Kazuya as, like, the pinnacle of, like, chaos. And I just don't agree. Like, I don't think as highly... Like, Kazuya is perfectly fine. Like, he's strong. But he's not that strong. Like he's not throwing you for a loop like Hero is. He's not throwing you for a loop like Steve is. And even Luigi might seem to have more depth to him than Kazuya at this point for, like winning in different ways. And yeah, I don't know. It's like you have to play a balance between like the tools that generally have been viewed as strong, and you have to have some crazy stuff on top of it. And or you just have to win the numbers game so hard that nothing else matters, which is fair. And the consistency characters are like close to that, but they're not actually doing that. Like, you're not going to pair Lucina with Sonic. You're not going to do that. Like, they're consistent for different reasons. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, some characters literally can't do like chase Sonic down after just like hitting you with the move, hitting your shield with a move that confirms into like 30 plus, like minimum 30 damage, if not more, off of like it's just so specifically overtuned to the point where certain characters can do very little or nothing about this character's win condition that racks up damage that also gets KO confirms if it's spin charged, right? Like, the list goes on and on. So yeah, very consistent for different reasons. And Hero, I wouldn't even, like, let's compare Hero and Cloud, right? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Hero down the line, if Ultimate's meta goes really, really far, is better than Cloud. Because even when I think about Cloud, like, what makes Cloud good is stuff like back air, just being really overtuned on stage with how much, you know, knockback it has, with it can combo you, especially no limit Cloud. You're in the air for a long time, so there's a lot of different parry windows that you can go for, and you have cross slash as a tempo breaker, right? Like, all these things on stage are super good. But then look at Hero. Obviously, Hero takes a hit when his disjoints come into play in terms of like just the range, the damage, the knockback, right? Like, obviously Hero's way toned down there, but Hero can not, like, if Game & Watch hits Hero can roll zoom, and like, it makes Game & Watch kind of have to guess with the up air. That is a very, like, just think that in your head. Hero has an option against Game & Watch, like, on the ledge, off stage, in a juggle scenario. Like, just having zoom is an answer and makes Game & Watch's offense harder to run. Cloud does not have that.
No, I think, dude, like, an X-Fat just came to my mind watching Beast Mode Paul play this weekend. That set he had with Limo, super close set, right? One of the big X factors as to why he won is because he did Magic Burst at one point, and it just stole a stock super early. You can't do that shit with Cloud. You know what,
like,
I'm saying?
Moments like that is what can lead to a potential big first place. Like,
that's what happened. He was losing that stock. It was game 5, if I remember correctly. And he ripped that. That was the first time we'd seen Magic Burst the entire set. For sure.
Like, some characters can't tap into that. They just don't have the capabilities to like go that like far into their bag. And I just think it's huge. Like, but there's clear differences between some of the, it's not just like you're either like basic or you're not. It's not that simple for like a game design type of thing, but I don't know, like, maybe it helped me explain myself a bit more with the sword thing, that the sword rant I had, because I was like watching an example of it before my eyes, like doing really well. And Joker's another example of like Smash just pushing its own designs farther. It's like, this is like a weird, like, disjoint chic, like, brawler, like, with a lot of extra. And I don't know, like, as cool as Mario is, I'm just not playing him for 10 years. I'm not playing him for 10 years.
And it's like, he's done really well in terms of like powering up over the years too, or like staying relevant, because he's still a good character.
Staying relevant.
Staying relevant is really important. I think another good one is like Cloud being the last DLC sword character, you know, for Smash 4, he was like, wow, this shit's crazy. Like, having Limit Forever was such a big deal, or having all these things. His neutral air, obviously. Like, there's so many things about Smash 4 Cloud that were broken. But now, like, Cloud, I think, is viewed as a pretty balanced and well-respected character overall. Like, he's not, you know, obviously he's overtuned in some ways. But then you look at some shit like Pyramithra, it's like, oh, fuck. Like, this is like the next evolution of the DLC swordie in a way, if that makes sense.
That's a character that I can't confidently say, like, oh yeah, Hero will be better than this character. Like, when I look at Pyramithra, I'm like, oh shit, like, now we're getting into ridiculously overtuned shit. Like,
it has a lot of the Cloud broken attributes, you know, whether it's movement speed or great safe aerials, all that shit. But then there's fucking two of them, you know what I mean? Like, that's a thing you can switch, or like, oh my god, yeah, anyway, whatever, like,
I think it's important to look at, like, okay, here's a mechanic that existed in a previous game and they just made it better with a different character, or like, here's something that is just so different that it's just not comparable. And like,
do we even talk about crits? Like, dude,
yeah,
things like snooze and stuff like that, like Gavin, snooze into psych up crit forward smash, like, we saw that.
Gavin,
like,
said it's not
a part of his core gameplay.
It
becomes more like the Magic Burst situation, like, has, where the thought of it, or it happening once, it's not it happening that's going to win them the set. It's now like you're just never going to play well. Like, it's just, there's just too much on your brain. Like, psych up Accelerado. The side B is like such a good, like, backbone of Hero.
Dude.
Then you have the jabs, and like that's why a character like this, as mediocre as some of the numbers can be, like, he can get away with, like, running at you and grabbing you. Like, dash grab is one of the worst options in Ultimate, and like, it's weirdly not for Hero, and his grab isn't that good.
Dude, his neutral B too, he got a lot of usage off of neutral B later in the tournament too. He was doing non-charge, he was doing fully charge, and like,
it's very
platform tech chase on the not charge, the fully charge to get stocks, B reverse canceling it just for the movement in the air. Like, Paul, I want to really emphasize this. These characters that Gavin are talking about, they have really high ceilings, but it takes a lot of effort and time to achieve these ceilings. And it's really cool to see Akakisu, Beast Mode Paul do so well with this character, because honestly, it is a character that you have to put a ton of time. There are so many different situations. You have so many different spells. So these players' mastery of that, and like, also it's speed reading. Like, how fast you can comprehend the words that pop up on the screen actually matter. If you just grind that and you're getting faster at reading and noticing stuff on the menu, even if it's by a frame or two, can matter, absolutely matter in terms of winning a game or a set or anything like that. And on top of that, I also want to just mention that Hero, there's any character that their strategy or their mechanics are so unique that you only get experience versus that against that specific character, also holds a lot of value in Ultimate. The only time you have to read versus Hero is, or the only time you have to read against any other character in Smash is just Hero. You don't get any type of practice. Even with item characters, at least first, there are multiple item characters. There are multiple Rushdown Brawler characters. So even against Rushdown Brawler characters, obviously they're all different, but even when they're running offense on you, it's like, okay, what is the rhythm of their hitboxes, right? Like, when are these box strings? And then you get these blanket strategies you can use against brawlers, against sword characters and stuff like that. But Hero's menu is so unique, you only get practice versus it against Hero players, because that's the only time you have to read, plus the language thing. Plus there's a language curveball. So many things that go into Hero. And I just want to appreciate Hero players, because you do have to do like next level grinding to be good with this character. You get put, there's so many variables you are put into, but you can also put that onto your opponent, which is strong.
Like, if you're playing against like a traditional character and they put you on the ledge, like, you have a general idea of the handful of like flow charts they have when they put you in that position. And with Hero, you don't know what flow chart they go with until they know what flow chart they're going with. And like, like the chaos and like the pacing and like how many mistakes you're going to make just because you can't go on autopilot and like trust your muscle memory in the matchup, because it doesn't work like that.
That's
it's been really interesting to see this character develop into, it's not just a roll the dice, inconsistent gamble. Like, it's actually weirdly become more consistent than a lot of characters you would expect, just because of, you know, it's not like, oh, I need to magic burst you to win, or I need to get a crit to win. It's like, oh no, that's just there to influence you. Like, I can win without doing anything. Like, I can win just by removing the things off the menu I don't want, buffing myself, playing from there. Like, it becomes very deliberate. And if things go well, they can play out the same game a few times in a row if it just all goes well. They don't need something silly. It's just been really interesting. And I think going into, like, if you know, the Switch 2 comes out in a week, and if you're considering, like, your future with Smash and, like, winning and, like, picking a character, like, try to pick something that is more of a game changer in terms of game design and character design or whatever you want to call it. Like, I truly think that could put you farther than, like, picking a character that we already understand going into it. Like, maybe there's, like, differences, obviously, like, small differences, but if a character's core design is just that crazy and unique, like, there's a chance that along the line that it can take you farther than if you pick the Marios of the world. Obviously, like, Mario's the type of character that can become more like a Fox or a Sonic, where they're just really strong and, like, they don't care. But yeah, it's interesting. Because I do think over the last couple games with Smash, Wii U, and Ultimate, that there was a bit of a blueprint set for the next game. And I think if you have enough experience, you can get ahead of the curve going into a new game, even though it doesn't exist yet. Like, what to expect, what type of character designs will be stronger than others, and, like, you know what I mean? Like, Cloud was clearly, like, all right, get ready for Smash Ultimate. Bayonetta was clearly, like, get ready for Smash Ultimate. Like, we're going to do things that haven't been done. And that's just where my head's at with Smash, so.
Like, even Corrin, too. Like, just that kind of...
Dude, really, yes. Corrin had so many things. And now she looks like a bread-and-butter vanilla character.
Totally. Yeah, like, Pain was not really a movie I'd ever seen before. And then it was, you know...
Yeah. After everyone stopped getting hit by Nair back air at the ledge, it was like, oh, okay. Like, as long as I don't get Nair back air... Like, everyone starts realizing there's specific windows where the character... quote-unquote bullshits you, like, where's their bullshit. As long as X or Y, as long as I don't get hit by X or Y, I should generally do pretty well, right? And I think players have gotten really good at that, just like not getting hit by the instapin two frame, not getting hit by Nair back air, and essentially forcing Corrin to get stocks at much later percents. It has been looking a little bit more rough for the Corrin players. But then, I mean, even, I don't know if you guys want to still talk about Hero, but I think there's been a lot of just meta changes throughout, even just this top eight. I mean, Lima versus Light, you know, I think that was an example of someone going for more of a drastically changing the strategy to try and compensate for a really bad matchup. I do think that matchup is horrible, by the way. I think Fox, I'm not like a Bayo player, but it feels like Bayo's worst top tier matchup. Because SDI down is just so, so good. Like,
yeah.
You really, it's so hard to even put Fox in a scenario where you put Fox off stage. Like, it's still possible, obviously, but SDI down. Yeah. SDI down or SDI down in a way, like any combination of SDI down is usually really, really good. And then we saw Lima trying to plank Light, but still was able to take one game off the planking timeout, but and almost did in a similar way to Sonic's where Lima didn't really have the lead and got the lead right at the very end at the last minute. Yeah. And then like couldn't catch him. It's like,
it okay, reminded cool. me of how Sonic's played against me at Kulon, because I think it's a really good strategy to like bide your time. And then like, if you benefit from a situation at the end and they just can't do anything about it, like they're so used to playing like at the same pacing for like 5-6 minutes. So it makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're only down, like, you know, if the stocks are even if you're losing and, like, you don't get something going until there's, like, a minute or less left, like this example right here, like, I don't know. It's something, like, I haven't seen too... It seems more deliberate than I would have expected from, like, Sonics and Lima. Like, I would expect to see it more from Sonics. Like, for Lima, it's, like, more of, like, a very specific matchup, but... Yeah, I don't know. There's something about it that feels different than just like trying to time out from 3-2-1 go. It's like, oh, I'm not trying to time out necessarily, but like my game plan can get influenced depending on like the first few interactions. And then all of a sudden it's like a close-ish game. and they like have a bit better like combo starters in that situation, like, or they're a bit more explosive off stage, so they're able to like get the lead and like run away with it. I don't know. It's interesting. Bayonetta is another character where it's like the design is just so crazy and different that you can't help but have faith in it. Like, I think if you want to get like a big first place and like catch people off guard multiple times, like get top players off their game, like that's another example of a character worth playing.
There is a part of those chaotic characters too, Gavin. I think that you need some of the good fundamental stuff too, though. Like Bayo needed some buffs before she became a relevant character because she couldn't snap the ledge, and that fucking sucks. Like you're just gonna die all the time, like whatever. Or whatever, you know, whatever else these characters need, because if your weaknesses are way too exploitable, it doesn't matter. Even if you are chaotic, maybe you can cause some upsets, like it'll still help you in that realm. But to find that consistency, like Hero, his weirdness makes his disadvantage state not exist, like, which is insane.
Zoom is fucking broken, and it only costs 6 mana. Like the amount of mana it costs and the value of that move, like, that's insane.
Yeah,
it's like, a really like interesting weird topic.
And it's running with Plant too. Like these weird characters can get W's, right?
They can. Well, he needed some help too, and so did the DK. Yeah, player, not only Plant. I'd love to talk about more of those. Maybe we could do that in Patreon. Talk about Spargo's win. Talk about the other tournaments over the weekend, and answer some questions from the Patreon. Gavin, where can they find us on Patreon? Come on, your full time content creator now. Let's hear it.
Yeah, we do bonus content for the show every week. Sometimes I even do like VOD reviews and like different things on the side. Patreon.com/tweaktalks. Thank you for supporting the show and the Patreon as always. Also, I have been streaming every day around a similar time, like anywhere between 7 and 8:30 Eastern PM. We've been doing tournament watch parties. Watching MomoCon was great. Thank you for all the support on that end. Definitely a lot of overhauls coming. I want to do more YouTube content in general. I also do, if you're interested in improving in Smash, or talking about any of these vague topics and trying to learn and understand, I do Metafy lessons. I forget the link for it. Yeah, there it is. Metafy.gg/@tweak. There you go.
We're getting there. Week one.
I almost fumbled that. but yeah, thank you so much for supporting the show as always. We're going to get into some bonus content. And yeah, that was a fun conversation.